We're talking now with Susan Drumheller, and she is a founding board member of Project 7B. Susan, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with a short take on what Project 7B is and why it is and what the mission is.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me. Project 7B is a local nonprofit. We started about 7 years ago. When we became concerned over some changes that were happening with the Bonner County Land Use Code. And we realized that there was no entity in our community that was really kind of, you know, looking at land use issues. And
kind of from a citizen advocacy point of view, really.
Yeah. And we didn't form as an advocacy group so much, except that we wanted to advocate for public involvement and do education around land use issues. And we started out as, we had a fiscal sponsor. And then when we did finally form as a 501c3 nonprofit organization, we added to our mission to also advocate for responsible growth. So occasionally we will take a position on something, but generally when we take a position, it's more about advocating for, you know, transparency in the decision making and making sure that people know what's going on, that they have an opportunity to learn about what's going on, that it's affecting their community and their neighborhoods, and can get involved.
Mm-hmm. So that's the main thing, get people paying attention and get involved in the whole planning process.
Yeah, and we really operate on a shoestring budget. So I just want to put a plug in, project7b.org. You can sign up for our newsletter and also make a donation online if you value the information we're bringing forward. We have a very active Facebook page, and we post information about public meetings related to land use issues, and sometimes other civic issues, because we just really believe that people don't have a lot of opportunities to find out about what's going on with their local government, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to land use. And in the recent years, you know, obviously growth has been exploding, so this has been a pretty hot topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do want to talk about a few topics today that are related to growth in the community and the planning and zoning issues that address our growth, since growth is happening so quickly here, including the comprehensive plan updates that both the city and the county have underway. But first, there's a hearing coming up on an issue that I consider goes to the heart of growth here. On December 19th, the county commissioners are having a public hearing on the proposed vacation of the Camp Bay Road that ends right at Lake Ponderé, and it's provided historic public access to the lake there. Developers of the property that the road goes through would like to make it a private road that would limit the access to the lake. And it's had a bit of a complicated course of events that have led up to this. So let's start there. Can you give us the rundown on, you know, frame up what the whole issue is with this Camp Bay Road proposed vacation?
Sure. Well, if you don't mind, I want to give you a little bit of history. Back in 1908, some of the people who homesteaded and lived around that there did a petition to the county asking that they create a public road there. And in their petition, they said it's needed to provide access for settlers to the store and post office in Glengarry Bay. And it also states the road is necessary to secure an outlet for the settlers to the lake shore at Camp Bay. And in 1908, there was no long bridge. And so people had a difficult time getting to Sandpoint. And so they would, you know, have to take a boat or, you know, figure out a way to get there. And in fact, there was this steamboat between Bayview and Sandpoint, and it stopped at multiple points. And Glengarry Bay, Whiskey Rock, Lakeview, Sunnyside, and other points. And there is a time card that was published in 1911 in the Ponderé Review, which was an old local paper. And it shows that the steamer stopped at Camp Bay at noon on its way from Bayview to Sandpoint. And there's other articles that talk about people getting their goods to market using that access point. So it was really important at that time to have these points on the peninsula for people to use the steamboat to get their mail or their goods to market or even to get a ride somewhere. So it was an important transportation thing. There's just been a lot of dispute over whether that road actually provided lake access, but I think that is very compelling, but also just, you know, what our state laws say. For instance, I'm sitting here looking at, I better stop right now because I could go on and on and on about like case law and whatnot. And this is something that they don't want to talk about at the hearing on the 19th, but there's plenty of justification.
So at the hearing, are they accepting that it's an established public right of way, or is that still something?
They're claiming that it's not established. Okay,
they
so
being
let me
the developers.
The developers, mm-hmm. and even the county, because at the last hearing, so this will be the third hearing. So let me just back up.
Okay.
So it was last year, Green Enterprises, which was the owner of the property at the time, applied to have Camp Bay Road abandoned and basically given to them. And they argued, and it's basically a half mile of road, not the whole road, to basically the end of where their northernmost property line is. Because the road basically bisects that property, bisects the bay, and ends at the high watermark. Mm-hmm. And according to state law, you know, the high watermark, if a right-of-way reaches the high watermark, then that's public access, right? So, and at the time when that petition was made and when they dedicated the road and made it a public road, I mean, it's public property. It's not an easement. It actually belongs to the county. Mm-hmm. That road went all the way down to the high watermark, which was way below where it is now because we didn't have the Albany Falls Dam.
Right. So the lake level was quite a bit lower then.
Right, right. So anyway, they did not argue at that time that there was no public access to the lake. Instead, they said it would save the county money not having to maintain the road if they abandoned the road and gave it to Green Enterprises. So the county agreed, even though neighbors came and people in the area came and protested. And so after they abandoned the road, Green Enterprises sold the property to M3, a development company, and they subsequently, started subdividing it and started developing it. But in the meantime, the neighbors, Jennifer and Fred Arn, filed a motion to reconsider or a judicial review, and so that basically started the legal process in motion. And it didn't end up going to court. The commissioners did not have the reconsideration hearing. And if they don't have that hearing, then it's okay for you to take it to court. You have to give them 60 days to decide whether they have a hearing or not. They didn't have any hearing, so they took it to court. And the court threw out the decision and sent it back to the commissioners. And the commissioners had another hearing, and at that point we all became aware of all this going on and got a lot of information out there about it. And that next hearing was absolutely packed with people and overwhelmingly opposed to vacating the road. The commissioner said, well, we don't know if it provides public access or not, so I guess the developer is going to have to take this to the court to see if it is. So they kind of left it up in the air, and they didn't abandon the road that time. And so they
actually kind of revoked their previous decision to abandon the road.
They did. And so basically it went back to M3. They filed a motion to reconsider. They took it to court. And in the meantime, they came up with this alternative proposal, which was to build a dirt path. So they want to, you know, they want to block the road about a half mile up. And at that point, there would be a roundabout and a gate, right? And from there, you can't even see the water. I mean, I have to say, I've been down there a few times in the last couple of years, and it's probably one of the most beautiful views you'll see anywhere on the lake. Yeah,
at the end of the road where you look out over Camp
Bay. It's amazing. And so what they want to do is gate it there, have a roundabout, and then they offered to put in a dirt path that would go down to where they're going to have like their community docks. And it's kind of on the side of the bay, so you don't have the same kind of view. It's also near an outlet of a creek, which now is there's like kind of this big marshy area there. So I don't know what the beach access would be like. I mean, the beach you have now is, you know, one of those nice rocky beaches.
You know, those cobblestone beaches that you can jump right in the lake from. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know how those beaches over there are. They're kind of flatter rocks. They're pretty nice. So we really don't know. We don't know where this public access would be. They would provide, you know, 50 feet of public access, but they're also going to have like this big community dock there. So there's going to be a lot of busyness and whatnot. And you would have to walk there. It would be non-motorized. So basically the judge said, well, because this provides, I'd have to like actually read the ruling again, but it's a little bit confusing to me. They decided not to rule on the whole question of whether or not the terminus of the Camp Bay Road right-of-way actually provides public access or not. Instead, they're like, well, because they brought up this other option that's that provides, you know, something for the commissioners to consider whether that provides, that's in the public interest or not, you know, if that, I don't know, is an equal trade. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's the question before the commissioners this time. So, so I guess that's what they're going to be deciding on, and they don't want to have a conversation as much about whether or not the original road provides public access, but whether or not that's going to make up for the fact that they're giving away this public road.
Mm-hmm. So what happens at the December 19th hearing?
Well,
they just accept public comment on the proposal.
I imagine the developer will give their presentation about this path that they're going to provide and ask again for the road to be vacated, and then the commissioners will take public comment, and then they'll decide.
Is it likely they'll decide right then at that hearing?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I doubt they're going to table it because these commissioners are about to leave office.
Well, that would be a follow-up question I had actually scribbled down here. Because we do have two new commissioners coming in, has it been broached that why don't you leave this decision to the new commission that's coming in?
I'm sure somebody has. I haven't personally.
Yeah. I just wonder what their take would be on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, well, what else should people know about this? If you want to comment on it, you would go to the hearing on December 19th.
Yes, one tricky part is the hearing is at 9 a.m. on a Monday. So that's kind of a hard time for people to attend. It will also be available by Zoom, so you could make your comments virtually that way. But if you don't think that you can attend either by Zoom or in person, but you want to weigh in, we highly encourage you to send a letter or an email to the planning department and the commissioners by December 12th, I would say, because usually it's like 7 days in advance that they want written comment for the staff report, but then they also, you know, post the staff report the same day, so I'm not quite sure why the week in advance thing, since they never really get acknowledged in the staff report anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, but I would definitely get your comments in in advance if you can't attend the meeting.
Prior to the 12th,
you recommend. Yeah. And the Arns have done some organizing. They created a website called 50feet.net. So you can also get a bunch of information there. They've got documents posted, you know, some of the history, you know, various things. So if you want to, and, you know, talking points, you know, and obviously from their point of view. So.
So how does public comment in your experience figure into a decision by the county commissioners? If there's a ton of public comment for or against this, do they kind of go with that, or does it end up getting kind of disregarded?
Well, I feel like this commission has been very, they don't really, I feel like, I guess, and this is my impression, and people can certainly argue with me on this, but you feel like oftentimes things are sort of predetermined. And part of that is because Dan McDonald is pretty verbose.
Commissioner Dan McDonald,
you know, he's often sharing his opinion on things on Facebook all the time. And, you know, I mean, letting people know how he feels about stuff. So you kind of feel like he's already made up his mind before he goes in there. I have seen Commissioner Bradshaw vote, it appears, based on what he's hearing at a hearing.
Mm-hmm. So you see, he tends to the public comment.
Yeah, I think he tends to be more sensitive to public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The other two, not quite so much. I feel like they basically lean on their attorney, Bill Wilson, to tell them what they legally can do or cannot do. And sometimes you feel like they're looking for every reason to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. So, I've been kind of disappointed, but we keep trying and we're not going to give up.
Well, public comment really is important for, regardless of how the particular agency or board weighs that in, I think it's important for citizens to be engaged that way. Yes.
Well, and also I think it makes a difference because, if somebody wants to take something to court, the public record is there.
Mm-hmm.
If nobody gets up and talks and shares information that could be pertinent, because there was potentially pertinent information. I mean, that's why the decision in the first place got remanded on Camp Bay, because they tried to shut down public comment. And basically the court said, hey, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to take the public comment. And also they might try to limit you to 3 minutes, but it sounds like when it's a motion to reconsider, which this is, they can't necessarily cut you off. Mm-hmm. So I think people should, you know, feel empowered to share what information they have. I mean, out of respect for other people, though, and, you know, the commissioners and everybody, it makes sense not to repeat stuff that's already mm-hmm. been said, but just if you can, you know, share your opinion.
Okay, well, let's, before we move on to another topic here, the arguments in favor of vacating the road or abandoning the road to the private developer, I mean, the first stated one was it would save the county money in maintenance of that half mile of road. Is that a valid point, I presume?
That's a good question. It doesn't necessarily save a lot of money. I mean, the cost to maintain that road is pretty small. We did an analysis, or, you know, and I don't remember the results of it now, but we looked at the county road budget and how many miles there are and how much they got to plow. And it's a tiny fraction, mm-hmm. you know, of the county's road budget. So it wasn't that big a deal. So I don't really know why they felt the need to abandon that road and give it to the developer. But one thing that was concerning was that as soon as they made that decision, boy, things just got rolling, and that area was immediately subdivided and immediately replatted, and it's still on the county map, even though they turned over their decision. A year later, it still shows on the county map that there's that road is not public, mm-hmm. and it does not reach the lake anymore. It turns, mm-hmm. and there's a large lot there at mm-hmm. the end of the road that's probably worth between $1 and $2 million. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's happened is there's been so much money invested in this development plan that it's really hard for the county to kind of backpedal and get out of this. Mm-hmm. So I imagine they're probably more worried about some kind of lawsuit from the developer than they are from the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, again, that hearing is December 19th, 9 a.m. at the county building. And folks can attend that, or you're recommending if they can't make it to that, they could submit public comment by the 12th. And you would find the information on this on the county website, I presume. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also a Zoom link will be available at the county website for people who can't get to the meeting in person but would like to see what goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to another topic that's really kind of a big one, really. The county and actually the city both are in the process of doing updates to their comprehensive plans. Let's talk mainly about the county, since I know Project 7B has been more involved with that particular process. How's this process going, and what is Project 7B's stand or position at this point on the whole process?
Well, I'd just like to back up a little bit, because I think a lot of people don't really understand what a comprehensive land use plan is and the purpose and how it relates to land use decisions. Earlier this year, we had some grant funds and we worked with the Gateway Natural Amenity Region Initiative at the University of Utah to put together a Land Use 101 webinar. And that is posted on our website at project7b.org. And I think it provides a really great background and kind of tutorial as to land use planning in general. And it talks about the comp plan process and how you basically the city of Driggs and Teton County did theirs and how that relates to zoning codes and land use decisions. So I just wanted to make a plug for that, because I think it's really helpful to kind of have that background. I was a reporter for years, and I was with Idaho Conservation League, and during those 2.5 decades, I spent a lot of time at planning meetings, and I participated in the comprehensive plan rewrite in Kootenai County. I covered the comprehensive plan update back in the early 2000s here in Bonner County. So I feel like I've had a lot of just kind of experience over the years. But for people who are kind of new to it, it's kind of understand why it's important. The comprehensive land use plan is the community's vision for how it wants to grow, how it wants to develop. And it is sort of, it doesn't have power of law so much, except the zoning codes, which are basically the land use codes and laws and rules that guide zoning and land use decisions, derive from that. They're supposed to carry out those goals and objectives that are articulated in the land use plan. So the land use plan kind of comes first, and it's really important. And in the case of the previous county update back in 2005, or I think 2004, 2005, they hired a consultant to come in and lead that process, which starts with lots of public involvement about, what are your values? What do you care about? How do you want to see things grow? What areas do you want to, see have be protected as, you know, agricultural areas, and where should the cities be, and, you know, kind of those big picture things. And then also the city is kind of doing that same sort of process. They brought in a consultant to help with that. I think one of our concerns with the county was they didn't bring any kind of consultant in. And the county started these sub-area planning committees a few years back. And it's just been kind of a weird, clunky process. And
so the sub-area committee, that's where they try to get a neighborhood, if you will, to weigh in on how they'd like to see their area of the county develop.
And it was a very confusing process. And I was involved in the one in Sagal. And usually sub-area plans are for very small areas. You know, I've learned that later from talking to planners, you know, professional planners. It's like, it's mainly to create like design standards for a really, you know, defined area. But we were trying to write these sub-area, like comprehensive land use plans for all of Sagal, which was like this huge area. And it ended up being like trying to write a comprehensive land use plan for that whole area. And they started out with like lots of like big meetings, but they weren't well facilitated. It was basically the former planning director and his staff, they didn't really have facilitation skills. They didn't really know how to do this. However, I think that, you know, they did gather a lot of good public input. And because that became unmanageable, they created these little committees. And then the committees kind of did their work. And they didn't really go out and seek public comment and stuff, but they did their work and they came back. And then the Planning Commission, which was the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then got split up.
Yeah, so now there's a Planning Commission
and a Zoning Commission.
I think that happened earlier.
And then they
this
also
year.
Now have a hearing examiner who's taken work off of the Zoning Commission. The reason they split up the Planning and Zoning Commission was because they wanted the Planning Commission to work on the comp plan, and they wanted the Zoning Commission to concentrate on questions of like applications, like zone changes and whatnot, subdivisions, which we hardly have any subdivision applications anymore. And that's a whole nother story, okay. The minor land division created and
kind of overridden the idea of having zoning. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah.
So let me just get back to the process. So the process is now the Planning Commission has taken all those sub-area plans that were created over the years, and they had a bunch of internal workshops, and they came up with, the county commission said, we want you to have this comp plan done by the end of the year. The Planning Commission only just formed like in May, and they said, okay, well, actually, you'll do the goals and objectives. We want all the goals and objectives done by the end of the year. And the Planning Commission itself actually wanted to have more time, and they wanted to do all the background work first and then do the goals and objectives, but they kind of got pushed into this tightened schedule. And a number of us, our initial comments in the summer were back up, go more slowly, involve the public more, and bring in a consultant. But they chose to go ahead in the direction they were going. Nonetheless, they did have, they did take in a fair amount of public input in August, and I saw that they did make some changes based on that public input. And now that information has gone to the commission, and they've held two public hearings so far. And so the one on the 21st is their final one. And it's just the comp plan goals and objectives.
Just that part of the comp plan.
Yeah.
But then there's more work to do after that.
Yeah, well, and they're actually in the process of doing the other work right now. They're going through each chapter, because by state statute, they have to include like all these different chapters in the comp plan that cover things like property rights, community design, land use, natural resources, hazardous areas, utilities, services, blah, blah, blah. So they're going chapter by chapter and making those changes. But they're doing it all internally, and I feel like it would have been a better process had they brought in an outside consultant to help guide this whole process and make sure that there's lots of public involvement and good information. And that's not, I don't want to diss the planning commissioners, who I know some of them have worked really, really hard.
Put
on
a lot
this.
Of time in. Unpaid
yeah,
time,
particularly yeah. Don Davis. And, you know, I mean, he really has put a lot of his heart and soul in it. And, but I just feel like they've been handed a really tough task without a lot of professional support, mm-hmm. because I don't feel like the current planning director is, frankly, I don't feel like he has the background and experience to guide them.
Mm-hmm. So what's coming up in just a week and a half as this airs is the county commission will decide whether or not to adopt the goals and objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And where can people get informed about that at this stage of the game? Like, what's proposed with those?
You can find them on the Bonner County Planning Department's website under current projects. And I can't remember what the file number is, but if you go to current projects, there is one for comprehensive plan amendments. And it is the one from the Planning Commission. So it's being put forward by the Planning Commission, and it's the, and I could probably look it up really quick.
So goals and objectives, they tend to be pretty high level often, mm-hmm. and, you know, and then the execution of them is where you get down into the details. But how big is this document that the county commissioners are going to be weighing in on?
Well, the goals and objectives is not super long, and it's AM0012-22. That's the file number for the goals and objectives and policies.
Okay, so if somebody listening goes to the county website, mm-hmm. and then to
the planning department and looks under current projects. I know
it's
buried down there.
That's right.
And then AM0012-22.
Okay.
And it's under comprehensive plan update.
Mm-hmm. So that's coming up pretty quickly too. If the county commissioners are considering it, is that a public hearing or is that just a a meeting to decide whether or not to adopt it?
It's a public hearing.
Okay.
Yes.
And would you, if people can't make that public hearing, again, they can submit written comments?
I would submit written comments. Mm-hmm. And the most recent version, which the commissioners edited, they had a hearing in late November, and then they continued it and had another hearing, and they made a number of changes to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that latest change dated 11/3/2022 is the latest version that they would decide on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you can look through that. And it also has notes on discussions that were held,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And for folks that have just tuned in, we're talking with Susan Drumheller of Project 7B, and we're talking about the comprehensive plan, also the vacation of the Camp Bay Road, two issues that are coming up before the county commission here in just the next couple weeks. Susan, in the remaining couple of minutes that we have here, a few minutes, you know, we're experiencing a ton of growth here in Bonner County. And I guess the main concerns that people would have that relate to this growth is, how do we maintain, first, a healthy environment, mm-hmm. and secondly, how do we maintain the rural character of our area? And it seems really hard to do, especially in an area that particularly prizes private property rights. Because what an individual might want to do with their property can be an impact on these other values, the rural character or the environment. How do you frame up what we can actually get accomplished to maintain the things that we love about living here?
That's where I think the goals and objectives of the comp plan are really important. And I ended up, I was very pleased that the Planning Commission listened to the public input that they had over the summer and strengthened some of the language in the property rights section of the comp plan, where they said, you know, property rights are a two-way street, because there is a philosophy out there where some people think that property rights means that if you own a piece of property, you can do whatever you want with it. Well, that makes all of this land use stuff, the comp plan, zoning codes, it makes it meaningless. It is a two-way street. What you do on your property can affect us. And one thing that started, and the commissioners, by the way, edited that out. So that was one thing I objected to at the last meeting. I think it's really important for people to pay attention to things like this and making sure that we have goals and objectives that actually reflect our values, like we want to protect our water quality, and that we have zoning codes that do things like that. Like, for instance, one reason Project 7B formed was back in 2016. They hired a new planning director and they just started going at the zoning codes and changing things. And among the things that they changed was they took out the requirement to have a sign off from the health district for septic when you create a subdivision. And if you create a subdivision, you create lots that don't have enough room for drain fields, you're setting yourself up for a failure. And we're seeing that happen now with some of the developments that are going in our area. Also, they created a new process that was exempt of the subdivision procedures. Whereas if you had a subdivision that was only four lots, it could be administratively approved and you didn't have to have any kind of review by the health district. There have been over 200 applications for minor land divisions. These are those four lot subdivisions this year. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lots being created that have absolutely no larger review under the subdivision standards. And the subdivision standards are created to make sure that the public, the neighbors, and the taxpayers in general are protected, that we have roads that can adequately serve emergency services and fire, that there's enough water to fight a fire, that there is, you know, like all these things that create a good development are why we have subdivision standards. Yet our county has been growing by leaps and bounds with these little minor land divisions and other kinds of administrative approvals that have been okayed by, in the last few years. So I think I'm hopeful that with some new leadership in the county that they'll take a hard look at some of these things and hopefully get back to having a little bit more oversight over some of this development. Because right now it's kind of the Wild West, and we basically have a buyer beware situation in this county.
And it also ends up impacting taxpayers if some of these subdivisions are undertaken in a way that ends up, you know, it falls back to the public to fix things that may have gotten messed up in them, such as, you know, too many septic tanks or road issues and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of factor as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And also when we have sprawl, like for instance, spot zoning is a big issue When we have, like, our land use map that's created as part of the comp plan is kind of the overview of, you know, here's our agricultural area. Here are our recreation areas where we can have small lots. Here's our cities and our suburbs, you know. And then the zoning dictates, you know, how small those lots can go. So in the last few years, we've seen multiple instances where you have an area that's zoned for, say, 10 to 20 acres, and they've gone in and changed the comp plan so that they can change the zoning to 5 acres in one little area. Well, then once you have that, then they go, oh, well, you know, it's 5 acres here, so it's consistent with the neighborhood to have another 5 acres. And so you start getting that sprawl. And then it costs more money for the taxpayers to serve those areas mm-hmm. because they tend to be in remote areas. Mm-hmm. Or if it's in that, you know, kind of forested area, you know, near public lands, then you've got more potential fire risk and more cost mm-hmm. to taxpayers. So that's the cost of service goes up mm-hmm. for the taxpayers. So ultimately it costs everybody money, and it's kind of incremental, and it's hard to calculate, but it is important.
There's so much more to talk about.
I got a bunch of questions here
I'm not going to get around to, but we're about out of time. Is there anything else that you want to put in at this time? I mean, the real goal here of Project 7B is to get people engaged, informed, and whatever their opinion is, weigh in with that on mm-hmm. these issues that are coming up before us. With that much, what, anything else you want to put out there?
I guess I would just say, drop a line to the new county commissioners when they're in office and let them know how you feel about these issues. I think it doesn't hurt to send an email to the county commissioners now and then and just say, hey, what about this? You know, I care about this. You know, make sure that they know you care, or show up at the meetings if you can. What I was just describing regarding the way we're growing and the cost of service and why these things matter is illustrated in a Bonner County story map that we also created, I guess it was about a year ago. So it's a little dated. The data is from, you know, that time. It's been a whole year since we did that.
How fast things are moving here.
I know. So we've grown a lot since then, but it does help illustrate some of these things. And the story map is kind of fun mm-hmm. to look at. And that's also on our website. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, just scroll down the page a little bit and you'll see the story map there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, we do have two new commissioners coming in, Asia Williams and Luke Ahmet, and that happens in January. And mm-hmm. as you mentioned, you know, they are there as public servants, right? So
yep.
Folks can start, I'm sure both of them are already paying a lot of attention to what's going on at this point.
Yeah. So. Well, let me just, one more thing. One reason I got interested in this stuff, everybody knows that I'm an environmentalist and I care about water quality a lot. I was working at Idaho Conservation League, and Idaho Conservation League looks at, you know, things on a statewide level. I'm really glad that they have somebody who's focused on water and here now, Jennifer Ekstrom, and she's also paying attention to some of these development issues. And I'm really happy about that, because what happens on land with development really does affect our environment. And it's not just water quality, it can be air quality, it can be wildlife, I mean, all kinds of things. So I do think that while it seems really wonky and boring, it's really important, and county decisions really matter, sometimes more than some of these national and other decisions. Mm-hmm.
And I will throw out, we did interview Jennifer as well as Brad Smith from the ICL just last week. So if people want to go listen to that podcast, which talking about the myriad water quality issues and also, you know, development around the lake, that's in our podcast page, November 30th. Just scroll down, you'll see that if they want to get up to speed on that. There's a great conversation there too. With that, Susan Drumheller, Project 7B, I want to say thank you for coming in to speak with us today.
Thank you.